This is Dr. Jay Corsandi, and you're listening to The Best Night Ever, the show that's dedicated to helping you get your best night's sleep. Over the last 20 years of treating patients, I've worn many hats, including dentist, engineer, psychologist, artist, corporate executive, and more. I've found that the key to success, health, and longevity lies in sleep, and that's why I created this show. I want to teach you how to make sleep your best friend. Join me on a journey to uncover cutting-edge science, life-changing tips from renowned experts, ancient and modern sleep secrets, game-changing routines, and lifestyle hacks that will educate, inspire, and ultimately help you get the best night ever. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. What if I were to tell you to get inside a metal tube, and I'm going to lock that tube shut and pressurize it to make you feel like you were under 33 feet of water, all while breathing oxygen at 100%, and all in the name of potentially game-changing health benefits? What would you say? Well, it's called hyperbaric oxygen therapy, and it's a thing, and I had the privilege of getting one of the top doctors in the world to spend about an hour with me and discuss how it works and why it's so freaking amazing. Joining me on the show today is Dr. Scott Scher. So I want to tell you a little bit about why I wanted to have Dr. Scott on the show. I'm always looking for ways to optimize my sleep and my health, whether it's through technologies, supplements, meditations, all kinds of gadgets. And one of the things that I didn't know a lot about was hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Whenever I thought about hyperbaric oxygen therapy, I would think about maybe Michael Jackson locked up in a metal tube with a little glass window. Looks like he's in a coffin, but it's really not that, and it's a lot more to it. So I was excited to get Dr. Scott on the show. Let me tell you a little bit more about him. He is a physician who's certified to practice something called health optimization medicine and a specialist in hyperbaric oxygen therapy. He's one of the top guys in the world probably when it comes to hyperbarics. He creates personalized treatments for patients that focus on helping the body heal rather than treating specific conditions. And he also incorporates dynamic hyperbaric oxygen therapy protocols as well as adjunctive technologies, including one of my favorites, biohacking. So in this show, we're going to discuss how his journey started from an alternative medicine family all the way to the present day hyperbaric oxygen therapy work, how hyperbaric oxygen therapy was discovered. Spoiler alert, it came from the diving world. What exactly is happening inside us when we use it? The effects of a commercial flight on your oxygen levels. Why hyperbaric oxygen therapy is so powerful. The secret loophole that hyperbaric oxygen therapy fills with restrictive religions. How about those trendy oxygen bars that you may have seen in airports and malls and kiosks? We're going to talk about that. The ways to get the most out of hyperbaric oxygen therapy and how to hack your experience, what health optimization medicine really is and how it differs from functional medicine and even traditional medicine. We're going to talk about the sleep benefits of hyperbaric oxygen therapy, especially for people who snore or have sleep apnea, and a lot more. And as always, if you want to learn more about me and my sleep recommendations and all the crazy things I do for sleep, you can follow me on my Instagram account at sleepbiohacker. Again, that's sleepbiohacker. So a biohacker is someone who likes to control their environment and get the most out of different technologies and modalities and hacking and tracking. So I share all that on my Instagram account. Again, it's sleepbiohacker. And if you find this show or other shows that I've done in the past helpful, please share this with a friend or two or hit subscribe. That helps me grow my audience and continue to get amazing guests like Scott on the show here to share their knowledge with you. And now, on to the show.
All right, Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
So we've talked before in the past, and I think you and I are both have kind of gone down a similar path where we started in a traditional healthcare model and then kind of went down this journey or path to things that are maybe a little bit more interesting or a little bit more non-traditional. For me, example is I went from general dentistry to the world of sleep medicine and sleep disordered breathing and now into sleep optimization and biohacking. And I think you kind of started, yeah. What's that?
And lasers.
And lasers, yes. Freaking lasers, yeah.
Yes.
And you've gone down the kind of allopathic model and into a whole world of things that we're going to talk about on the show. And that's why I have you on here. But can you share with everyone listening kind of how you started and how you got to where you're at now?
Yeah. So my path actually started very out of the box because my father is a chiropractor and not your traditional manipulate and subluxate bones and necks kind of guy. He's a very much an out of the box thinker and in a very alternative way, in a very holistic way, and not just looking at the spine, for example. And so I grew up obviously in his home and his practice, which is in my house for a little while. And I used to go down and hang out at his office. I worked at his front desk for a little while when I was older and needed cash in my pocket. And so I grew up with a very alternative, out-of-the-box mindset that was very unconventional. In fact, I think before going to college, I went to a medical doctor twice or three times. I mean, not very much. And that's for like school physicals and things like that, that he couldn't do. And it was actually sort of, that actually dovetails into why I went to medical school. The idea really was he had a fantastic practice. He really enjoyed what he did, but there were limitations as to what he could do because as a chiropractor, you had limitations on your license. And so his recommendation to me at the time, and I was a young, impressionable kid, he's like, you should go to medical school, then you can figure it out. You can get the conventional education, have the MD, and then decide at that point what you'd like to do with that medical license. Would you want to do just alternative medicine? You can do that. If you want to do conventional and alternative medicine, you can do that both. And that actually resonated with me because I, even though I wasn't trained or really had a lot of experience with conventional medicine, it was pretty obvious to me that it had its benefits. I mean, we all know that getting acute care in the hospital can be a huge benefit, huge life-saving benefit, of course. But what's broken about the conventional system really is the non-acute environment, really, in the sense of it, all the long-term management of illness, of conditions, of health, really. I mean, it's not something that really maintains health. It really does treat disease. And so that's what acute care is really good for. But I also knew that in my own development, it was very likely that I was going to find something that created some sort of confluence of the alternative and the conventional. And when I was in medical school, I was introduced to hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And it was in an acute care setting. It was in a shock trauma setting. It was in a facility where they were treating gunshot wounds and necrotizing fasciitis, which is flesh-eating bacteria, carbon monoxide poisoning. And I saw patients that were going inside hyperbaric chambers and looking like they were going to die when they first went in and come out completely different people. Some that were on ventilators before they went in, and the same person walking out of the chamber completely lucid when they were comatose prior. Carbon monoxide poisoning specifically, you could see that happen. And when I noticed that, of course, I was very tired at the time because I was working every three nights, 30-hour shifts in a trauma center as a medical student, being asked to do all the gut work, all the stuff that nobody else wanted to do. So I was tired, but when I had a chance to reflect on my time there and understand more about the technology and about the physiology happening in the hyperbaric chamber, I realized it was actually exactly what I was looking for because it was so simple and so powerful. It was just extra oxygen and extra pressure. And the combination of the two drove a lot more oxygen in circulation and allowed all these amazing things to happen. So it was because of that experience over the last 10 years. But starting from that time, I really dove in, no pun intended, because we dive in hyperbaric chambers. Okay, there was a pun intended there, Jay.
I love it.
A terrible one. But I really went into the research, understood what was happening, and saw how powerful it could be, not only for some of the stuff they were using it for in the acute setting, but also in the long-term setting outside of the hospital and in conditions that were not even being treated in this country because they weren't insurance covered, but had a lot of potential benefit and impact.
The off-label stuff.
Yeah, and then integrating a practice where hyperbaric therapy was the core treatment, but then understanding that it wasn't just about hyperbaric therapy that really got people better. It was about more of a holistic approach, kind of like how I grew up, but also that was including some of the acute conventional care at times as well, altogether. And so when I first finished medical school, I did a little bit of regular doctoring, and I still do some regular doctoring as well, but that has not become the focus of my passion, the focus of my work. My work really has become, as you've described for you, Jay, it's been more creating an environment for healing using the power of hyperbaric oxygen therapy, along with a foundational practice of health that I've created through the work of others and that's called health optimization medicine. Yeah. That is the foundation of my practice in health in hyperbaric medicine. So what I often say is, if you have an acute injury, hyperbaric therapy is a fantastic healer. It's going to make you heal faster. But if you have a more long-term issue, you really have to consider what that foundation is that you're building on hyperbaric therapy prior to getting in and doing the treatment, to make it the most bang for your buck, the most power for your time spent inside the treatment.
Got it. So for people listening, obviously we're talking about hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And it, from my understanding, it came from the diving world where people were ascending too fast, right? And can you explain for people listening what hyperbaric oxygen therapy is? Like, how does it work and why does it work?
Of course, yes. Yeah. So it did come from diving. It came from treating the bends or decompression illness. They found back building bridges in the late 1800s, 1880s or so, the Brooklyn Bridge specifically, that if you're building a bridge underwater and you come up too fast from being underwater, you can get these terrible symptoms that they called the bends, the Grecken bends. They would kill people. It would kill people, neurologic symptoms, seizures. The main architect was paralyzed from it, building the Brooklyn Bridge. Hmm. But if you went back down inside that chamber underneath the water where you were building the bridge, your symptoms would go away.
Hmm.
So they decided, well, we need to build this kind of chamber that's underneath the water where you're building the bridge outside of the water on land where people can go into if they have an injury. So these chambers were first started as a result of treating the bends or treating decompression illness. And the physiology is very simple. You're increasing the amount of inspired oxygen that you're breathing, and you're increasing the amount of atmospheric pressure that your body, your whole body, is under. Now, oxygen is pretty simple. We breathe 21% oxygen in the air. That's at sea level right now. Mm-hmm. And we increase that amount of oxygen to 100%, typically around 100% in the chamber. And that's number one. Number two is that we increase the amount of pressure around you, your physiology, your lungs inside the chamber. Now, typically at sea level, that's called atmospheric pressure. 1 ATA is our lingo. Now, if you go 33 feet below the sea, you have a lot of water above you if you were under actual seawater. And all that water is actually exerting a significant pressure on your physiology, on your body. And you know that, you know, water's heavy. If you pick up a bucket of water, it's heavy. If you're swimming in the water, underneath the water, you may not feel it's heavy because you're weightless inside the water. But it's a really heavy, heavy molecule. And so in the chamber, we're simulating that heaviness along with that increased inspired oxygen to drive more oxygen in circulation. And we do that because when you increase that pressure, you're actually increasing the pressure on the gases that are in the air that you're breathing. So in this case, you're increasing the pressure on oxygen, that oxygen gas. And simple physics will tell you something called Henry's Law. The more pressure you put on a molecule that's in a gaseous form, the more that gaseous form is going to turn into liquid form. So in this case, we're talking about oxygen gas turning into liquid O2. Now, oxygen's usually carried on red blood cells in our body. So we take a deep breath, oxygen gets brought into the system, carried on red blood cells on hemoglobin molecules, and that maintains our physiologic function. So if you ever put a pulse oximeter on your finger and it shows 97 to 100% oxygen saturation, that's measuring how many sites of hemoglobin are bound by oxygen when they leave your lungs and go to your body to make physiological needs, do your physiologic processing. Okay. So that's a pulse oximeter. So there's not a huge amount more sites left if you're in an oxygen chamber, for example, in a hyperbaric chamber, to get more oxygen bound. The body's doing a pretty good job of it already. But what you can see in a hyperbaric chamber is there's a different way you can get oxygen in circulation. And that's by increasing the amount of oxygen in the plasma or the liquid of your blood. And that's what happens in the chamber. You're actually increasing the amount of liquid O2 that's floating around your system. Now, there are ways to increase oxygen carrying capacity by increasing red blood cell mass. So you can increase the number of red blood cells in circulation. You can do that by altitude training. You can do that also by taking EPOgen, which is also known as EPO, which is the doping drug that cyclists and others use to increase oxygen carrying capacity. But if you're looking to increase oxygen carrying capacity in a legal way, you can increase the amount of oxygen in your plasma, in the liquid of your blood. And when you do that, you can increase the amount of oxygen 1,200% or more, because it's an untapped resource, the amount of oxygen that you can put into your liquid, into the plasma of your blood. And so that untapped resource, that plasma, we're increasing significantly amount of oxygen circulation, and that's allowing more oxygen to get everywhere it needs to go.
So obviously I'm familiar with pulse oximeters, with sleep disorder breathing, and people who snore or have apnea, they're choking and they're stopping breathing and their oxygens are desaturating down. I've had them go below 50% at night, which is, I tell them they need to go to the urgent care or the ER right now. But if hypothetically, I mean, this is just my own curiosity, if I was to have a pulse oximeter that went up to 1200% and put that on my finger in the chamber, would you get over 100% saturation?
So a pulse ox will only go to 100%.
Right.
It'll only measure 100% of your sites bound by oxygen to hemoglobin
molecules. Is there any way to measure plasma oxygen?
Not any easy way.
Okay. All right.
There are a few technologies out there that are looking at mitochondrial PO2. Mm-hmm. And so looking at how much your oxygen your mitochondria are using. Mm. And in that capacity, you will see an increase in mitochondrial PO2 utilization because you're getting more oxygen to the mitochondria to make more energy.
Would that be like VO2 max?
So VO2 max is the minute-to-minute utilization of oxygen. And so that is an indicator of oxygen carrying capacity. Mm-hmm. So nobody's done the studies looking at the acute hyperbaric exposure and then getting on a VO2 max machine. But we do know that once you're in a hyperbaric chamber, you have about 45 minutes or so where more oxygen is going to be circulating. So hypothetically, your VO2 max would go up in that period of time. Now, over the long term, though, this is more about hyperbaric physiology. You know, what happens after all that oxygen's infused into the body? What are the results of that?
Yep.
Over the long term, you will see an increase in VO2 max. And the Israelis actually have done some studies looking at VO2 max before and after a hyperbaric protocol. These are actually regrowing blood vessels around your heart, and then increasing the amount of oxygen that can get to tissue, because the more oxygen in the blood vessels and the more blood vessels there are, the more oxygen is going to diffuse outside those blood vessels. And basically, there are going to be more areas of the heart that are well oxygenated for a long period of time.
Gotcha.
So as a result of that, you can see an increased VO2 max. But in the short term, there's really no easy way to measure that oxygenation in the plasma, unless you have some invasive things like Swan-Ganz catheters, which I don't recommend.
Gotcha. So I had a chance to actually try hyperbaric oxygen therapy a couple of weeks ago after your recommendation, and it was a fantastic experience. I think I texted you right afterwards and said, this was awesome.
Right, you did, yes.
And, you know, the easiest way to explain it is, yeah, you're in a tube or a chamber, and there's the pressure's going up. I think it went up to 1.35 ATA for me, full oxygen, and it's very relaxing, meditative, calming. I felt great afterwards. And for people who are listening, I thought of an analogy. You tell me what you think.
Yeah.
I would say if anyone's flown on a commercial flight, would you kind of have been in some kind of a chamber? Because they do pressurize the plane and there's oxygen, right?
So interestingly, you mentioned that, Jay. It's actually the opposite. It's a hypobaric. It's HYPO baric environment on a plane. Because a plane is pressurized to 6,000 or 8,000 feet above sea level. So there is less oxygen in circulation at those pressures. And as a result of that, you are breathing less oxygen because of those pressures when you're on an airline, when you're on a flight. And that's likely one of the reasons why you have a higher risk of being sick and being jet lagged. And so the Dreamliner, for example, the newer plane, is pressurized at 6,000 feet and not 8,000 feet so that you get less jet lag and you get less potential risk of sickness, et cetera.
Right.
So it feels the same as being on a plane in some ways because you're changing pressures. And when you're changing pressures, your ear pressure is going to change. So that popping in your ears is the same. And we can use hyperbaric therapy as a way to actually hack jet lag as well, because you're hyperoxygenating the system after being in a hypooxygenating environment, in a hypoxic environment, let's say. So in a low oxygen environment, always to say the same thing. So a plane is the opposite scenario, interestingly enough.
Interesting. Yeah. And they can't pressurize it down to sea level elevation?
They don't. And I think they don't do it because it's too expensive.
Yeah.
And they don't, and they give you recirculated air from, and you get gas fumes in it as well, because it's too expensive to give you clean air. Although I've heard there's a couple airlines that don't do that, but I'm not sure exactly, but in general, we have in a plane a very toxic environment.
Yes,
right, for a lot of different reasons, and one of the main reasons is because you're breathing less oxygen while you're up there.
Got it.
And
yeah.
So there's lots of ways to hack plane flights, but one of them is to get into a hyperbaric chamber when you get off the plane to reoxygenate yourself as fast as possible.
So that's a good jet lag hack. I've actually done a whole entire episode on how to hack jet lag, but this HBOT wasn't one of my go-tos, but now I'm going to have to revise that. I know. I'm getting back. I'll do it again.
All good. There's always new things happening, right? So in this case, it's not an easy thing to do though, right? Because you have to get into a chamber, you have to find a facility.
Is there a certain like window of opportunity once you get off to get it, or where the effects would become negligible afterwards?
I mean, the sooner the better is what we often say. Yeah. I mean, and I can't say there's any studies with this specifically,
right?
But this is just my own personal experience.
I think it's a great idea. And I remember reading, or I think it was one of your lectures I was watching, where you said, if you get up to a high enough pressure, I think it was about 3 ATA, you wouldn't even need to have red blood cells in your body because you would be that saturated. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
How is that even possible?
So, because you can saturate so much oxygen in your plasma that it negates the need to have any red blood cells to carry oxygen. And if you can think about it, I mean, there's a lot of uses for that. If you have a severe trauma, you have hemorrhage, if you're a Jehovah's Witness and you don't want blood transfusions, it's a way to temporize the need for red blood cells, right? Because you can get somebody into a chamber fast, you can saturate them with enough oxygen that they don't require as many red blood cells to circulate and to survive and to maintain your physiologic function.
I was gonna ask you about the Jehovah's Witness too, because they do have certain limitations on medical treatment, but this is like a loophole.
Yeah, it is. It's a loophole for a Jehovah's Witness for potentially. I mean, it's not a long-term solution in the sense it's not going to grow new blood vessels. It's not going to grow new blood cells in the chamber. It will grow new blood vessels, but you still need blood cells to go in those blood vessels, if you know what I mean, right?
Gotcha.
The way I like to think about it, Jay, is that there's like the acute infusion of hyperbaric therapy, of the oxygen, and then there's the long-term benefits and oxygen infusion protocol. When you acutely infuse oxygen into the system, you are creating this physiologic change. The first thing that's actually happening is that you're delivering more oxygen, right? And then delivering more oxygen is going to make more energy. And more energy is produced because oxygen is the final electron acceptor on the electron transport chain in the mitochondria, right? So you need oxygen to make energy, whether you're in a hyperbaric chamber or not. We are infusing a lot more oxygen in circulation. As a result of being more infused, more saturated in the plasma, more of that oxygen is going to diffuse outside of the blood vessel and get to areas that may be injured or at risk. So if you've had a heart attack, a stroke, an injury of any type, a spinal cord injury, or even a surgery, some tissue is going to be at risk because it's been damaged by that intervention or that accident, and some tissue is going to potentially die. So the quicker you can get into an oxygen-rich environment, the more tissue you're going to save. That being said, if you've had a stroke or a heart attack, please go to the hospital first. Don't come to my clinic. Get stabilized first. But the faster you can get into the chamber, the better. And they've done studies looking at this. They've done studies on acute heart attacks, more studies coming out on acute stroke and traumatic brain injury, and other significant trauma, acute traumatic ischemias, whether it be limb amputation or compartment syndrome or any number of other things that are more significant that I saw in trauma centers. The quicker you get into the chamber, the more tissue you're going to save, plain and simple. And that's simply more oxygen in the environment, more oxygen making energy, more oxygen diffusing outside of blood vessels to get to tissue that may be at risk. The second thing that's happening is actually constricting down blood vessels. You may think that'd be a bad thing, but if you have a trauma and you have blood vessels that are damaged and they're leaking out stuff that shouldn't be in tissue, causing inflammation, causing tissue to be degenerating.
Necrosis.
Necrosis, et cetera. You want to prevent as much as that as possible. And also swelling, right? So if blood vessels injured, more stuff's going to swell, or more stuff's going to come out of the tissue and cause swelling. So hyperbaric therapy is going to constrict down those blood vessels, prevent swelling, prevent all that downregulation, or prevent that damage of tissue, I should say. Even though you're constricting down blood vessels, the net is that you're increasing the amount of oxygen delivered by a significant amount because you've diffused so much more oxygen into plasma. The other thing that's happening is that you're having an acute stem cell release. You're having release of stem cells from the bone and also from brain tissue. Stem cells can make any tissue in our body. They start the healing process. There's also an immune system upregulation, so helping all the first cells that need to get to tissue to start helping it clear out debris, like neutrophils and macrophages, for example, white blood cells, help those cells start mobilizing to tissue to start healing the tissue faster. So I often think of hyperbaric therapy, the acute infusion, as a way to just make the body's healing mechanisms more efficient. And that's really what it's doing over the acute protocols, the acute infusions of hyperbaric therapy over a couple treatments. It also is an anti-infective. It'll kill bugs that do not like high oxygen environments. And it's also a detoxification mechanism, because the more pressure you're putting on the body, that pressurizes your lymphatics, it pressurizes your blood vessels, so that you're actually getting things to move faster. And you're actually delivering, number one, and then you're getting them to detoxify at the same time. So that's the acute infusion. Over a long-term oxygen protocol, you're actually affecting epigenetics. And what I mean by that is that you're affecting how genes are expressed and suppressed and manifesting healing over the long term. And that's what I like to call rebuilding scaffolding of tissue. Like, you need the scaffolding of a building to make a building. You need scaffolding of tissue to maintain tissue over the long term. You need new connective tissue, new bone, new neurons, new glial cells, new supporting cells, and you need new blood vessels. And all of that needs to be recreated in areas that have been injured, that have been deteriorating, that have been degenerating, that have been infected, whatever. And then allow that tissue to maintain itself over the long term is really what the beauty of a hyperbaric protocol can do. At the same time, optimizing that tissue. So very likely, we think senescent cells, which are these zombie-like cells that accumulate in our body over time, get disposed of after hyperbaric treatment. We don't know exactly how that's happening, but they're either regenerating these cells, or these cells are just remembering that they should be dead and then kill themselves off, and they don't cause inflammation and cancer and all these other kinds of things. So over the long term, we're seeing this rebuilding, this regenerating of the system from the ground up. And as a result of the physiology, which I sum up as reversing hypoxia, decreasing inflammation, stem cell release, bug killing, and pressurizing to help with lymphatic detoxification, that's really what we're doing in the chamber. So if any of your conditions that you know of can benefit from that, let me know.
Man, I mean, that's like a slam dunk of a therapy. I mean, I'm almost shocked that it's not more prescribed or available, or people know about it, aware.
Well, yeah, it has to be used in context like anything else. It's not just it's a cure-all, you get in and everything's going to get better. Yeah. It's like, what are you doing with hyperbaric therapy to make it more optimal? For example, you've had a traumatic brain injury. If you had an acute injury, you also want to be looking at brain-enhancing supplements. You want to look at neurofeedback. You want to look at dietary changes, right? So it's not just about getting to the chamber. Now, I have to say, though, for acute issues, I often throw the bus at people, supplements, therapies, practitioners, and the chamber. But if it's a more of a long-term issue, whether it's simply you're getting older and you want to regenerate, or you have an injury, a stroke, a traumatic brain injury, you have a chronic infection, a chronic wound, or whatever, it's not just about hyperbaric therapy. It's about building up a foundation, a base that's going to allow you to harness the power of hyperbaric therapy. So I often find people that will contact me and say, hey, Dr. Scott, I'd love to get in your chamber. I have chronic migraines, or I have chronic Lyme disease, or fill in the blank. And I say, you know, hyperbaric therapy would potentially be very effective for you, but before you get into the chamber, you should see my colleague who specializes in Lyme disease. Or before you go into the chamber, we should talk about doing a foundational assessment to understand, do you have sleep apnea, you know, for example, or do you have B vitamin deficiencies? Are you toxic? Is your gut toxic? Are you eating foods that you're intolerant to? Those kinds of things, because without doing that work ahead of time, even if you get better in the chamber, Jay, and you're not addressing those things,
yeah,
you're going to go back to the way you were before, most likely at some point. Mm-hmm. It's like eating McDonald's every day and then thinking that hyperbaric therapy is going to help you, but then going back to eating McDonald's afterwards.
Yeah.
And I've had arguments, or not arguments, but conversations with some of my colleagues in the hyperbaric community about this, because the largest hyperbaric facility in the world is in Israel. Mm-hmm. And the Israelis are treating 200 patients a day or more with a 10,000 person waiting list for their rejuvenation program, their reverse aging hyperbaric program. But they really have a lot of dietary strategies for these people, right? They just come in, they do their thing. And I asked the Israelis, I'm like, well, guys, what about some of the other things that we've just discussed? And they're like, well, we tell them to eat coconut oil. And I go, okay, that sounds good. But like, what about when their symptoms come back? They're like, well, that's another financial model for us, right? It's like, you know, you need it. Pulmonologists need cigarette smokers, right? It's the same kind of deal.
Yeah.
Like that's their model in some capacity. It's not my model. My model is, let's do this the first time. Let's make it as most optimally awesome as possible, within the context of understanding what your needs are and what your ability is in a lot of ways, you know, yeah, time, money, all those kinds of things. And then make something that can be more sustainable for you over the long term.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I mean, 100%. It's a matter of lifestyle management as well, too, because if you go and do all these different therapies, I mean, I look at this as almost like a supplement. It's another thing that you can add to your regimen. But if you don't fix the root causes, I mean, we're talking about, you know, functional medicine type, integrated medicine type of stuff here. If you don't get to the root causes, yeah, you're just going to, you know, you're going to be doing the same thing over and over again, not going to progress.
Right. And that's been my experience in the chamber, that when I first started, I saw that people would go back to the way they were before. Like, their symptoms would improve, maybe not significantly. Maybe they wouldn't go back entirely to how they felt before, but they would, you know, have a little bit of a slide back. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder, well, what else could we do? And then I created an integrative hyperbaric program, which I still do. And I still consult with people along those lines to some degree, actually to a large degree. But I also recommend, if there's a more of a long-term issue ongoing, that we discuss more of these foundational things. You know, functional medicine is one way to go, looking at root causes. I have my own practice, which is a little bit different.
We're going
to
talk about that. Yeah. Medicine,
which is a little bit different focus, but similar in the sense of looking at a more holistic approach. And then I often have lots of recommendations, but I try to pare them down for the particular person, you know, like what other therapies, practitioners, places they should go to help augment their experience and their recovery, if that's the case.
Gotcha. Another silly question here for you. I'm sure you've seen them. I know when I walk around malls or airports, I'll see these little kiosks with little bubbling machines of oxygen and people sitting there with nasal cannulas. Are they getting any benefit to that? Because it's not pressurized. They're just sitting there breathing, you know,
right,
bubbles.
So I certainly don't think it will hurt. Rate limiting factor, like we said, without pressure is your red blood cell oxygen saturation, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're coming off a plane and you were now at 92% oxygen saturation because you were hypoxic or low oxygen for those hours of your flight, I think getting on an oxygen machine, nasal cannula without pressure, can be helpful. Absolutely. I don't see it as beneficial as going into a chamber by a long shot, but it is something that we use. And in fact, there is some indication that if you go into a hyperbaric chamber and then use nasal cannula oxygen without the pressure after the hyperbaric treatment, you can utilize oxygen better in the post-treatment period for longer. And so that means you can, your brain will be using oxygen and your body will be using oxygen better for a longer period of time after you get out of the chamber if you use nasal cannula oxygen after getting out of the chamber for a period of time. So they've done some studies looking at traumatic brain injury for this specifically. And they saw that in acute traumatic brain injured adults and kids, if you did an hour in the hyperbaric chamber and then 3 hours with 100% oxygen afterwards, your brain was utilizing oxygen better for 24 hours after your hyperbaric treatment, as opposed to somebody who didn't get that same treatment.
Man, so, I feel like I missed out after my last treatment. Now I need to go back and do it again.
Well, I mean, some facilities have that capability and some don't, right? Yeah. So it really depends on the place.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about acute conditions that can be benefited from therapy. What if you are looking at a more longevity perspective or a long play as far as getting better and incorporating this into that regimen?
So it depends what your goals are. I mean, all of our goals obviously is not only to live longer, but to live healthier. So we have the most healthy years here on this planet as possible. Health span, not lifespan, right? That's the difference. And of course, you want them to be approximating together so that you're living a long life and it's a healthy life at the same time. So there's different types of hyperbaric chambers. As you know, Jay, there's soft or mild hyperbaric chamber that goes to 1.3 ATA typically, and that's about 20 feet of seawater equivalent. And then there's hard chambers of two varieties, a monoplace, which is a single person unit that goes to about 3 ATA, which is 66 feet of seawater. And then there's the multiplace chambers that go to very, very deep pressures that treat patients that have been in diving injuries, building tunnels underneath the water, or those kinds of injuries, et cetera. And so they're used for different things. From a long-term rejuvenation, revitalization, longevity perspective, it really depends on where you fall in there. We all have injuries. We all have inflammation. We all have various things that build up over time. The optimal pressure really depends, but from a neurocognitive perspective, the optimal pressure is somewhere between 1.3 and 2 atmospheres. And from a systemic perspective, full body, heart, genital organs, outside of the brain and spinal cord, it's usually somewhere between 2.0 and 2.4. Hmm. So our sort of sweet spot for everything is about 2 atmospheres, usually. That's in hard chambers. And from a longevity perspective, what we can see is that we see as I was describing before a little bit, you see regrowth of blood vessels in areas of the brain, the heart, the genital regions where they've degenerated over time. So you can see new brain function, new improved cardiac function, improved sexual function as well. And so those are important. We have a natural Viagra machine. It's called a hyperbaric chamber. Come on, right? That's what the Israelis do. They show people, they've shown and they've done studies looking at blood flow in the penis before and after a protocol of hyperbaric therapy. And all the guys sign up, right?
Oh my God.
It's not only guys that benefit though, it's also women as well. They just haven't done the studies, but looking at, you know, vaginal engorgement, it's the same. You know, vaginal atrophy is a real thing that happens after menopause. It's the same deal. And so there's hormonal reasons for it, of course, too.
Is there like a nitric oxide agonist effect with hyperbaric?
Well, that's one of the things it's doing, is improving blood vascular health in that capacity, improving nitric oxide synthase release, improving blood vessel dilation over the long term. Yeah. Not even just dilation, but blood vessel elasticity. So the ability of the blood vessel to maintain its ability to constrict and dilate better. Because what happens over time is that our blood vessels get less, they get harder. They're called atherosclerosis, right? But they get less elastic. And as a result of that losing elasticity, they have the inability to maintain their physiologic functions one way or the other.
They get stiffer, no pun intended.
I haven't used that. I love it. Okay, awesome. Yes, they get stiffer, but not in the way you want them to.
Right.
So you get less stiff and other ways more stiff, I guess. So the rejuvenation program for hyperbaric therapy depends on kind of where people are at in their process, right? But for me, if somebody's really interested from a neurocognitive perspective, we can use the soft chambers to improve neurocognitive function. So helping with your brain function better. And we know that blood vessel growth and blood vasculature and blood flow, I should say, actually concentrate in an area of your brain called the hippocampus. Mm-hmm. And the hippocampus is an area of our brain where we store memories. And we have to be able to take memories from our hippocampus and bring them to our frontal lobe, another place where oxygen from a hyperbaric treatment actually concentrates. We have to bring those memories from the hippocampus, which is deeper in our brain, to our frontal lobes to be able to use that information and to remember those memories. And vice versa, to remember things over the long term, we have to be able to bring things from our frontal lobe to our hippocampus and solidify our memories there. So we're improving blood flow and blood vasculature in those areas. In fact, the hippocampus is one of the areas that has the highest concentration of mitochondria in the brain or even in the body as a result of its constant need to make new memories. So just as an aside, I was just learning about that the other day, interestingly enough. So the brain is actually a place where the most mitochondria per cell are located. There and the heart and the liver are the three places where we have the most. And so that's where oxygen in a hyperbaric chamber, when we diffuse all that oxygen in circulation, that's where it's going, to the brain, to the heart, to helping with detox in the liver, et cetera. So it's all physiology here, man. And the idea really is, how can we use this in a therapeutic setting? So if somebody's coming from a longevity perspective, that's how we do it. If somebody's had a stroke, had a traumatic brain injury, has other areas of inflammation, we can use hyperbaric therapy as a result of what it's doing. And over time, we all have things that pop up and it can be used effectively in the context of likely other therapies and practices to help out.
Got it. Okay. So you and I think are both in the same group of people who like to do this thing called biohacking, which some people know I've mentioned a million times on my show. It's becoming a bit more mainstream in some aspects. Mm-hmm. And one of the key features of biohacking are people who like to stack or blend or combine different modalities to get the most bang for your buck. I know you mentioned in the beginning that one of the initial effects of hyperbaric oxygen therapy is vasoconstriction. And if you're not using it in an acute setting, how could you hack that with like some like nitroglycerin or something before just to get, or what are other different modalities or supplements or stacks that you could do in conjunction with this to get a bigger bang for the buck?
I'm going to introduce a term to you right now, Jay. We'll get back to it. I'm going to answer your question. But I like to think of biohacking a little bit differently.
Sure.
I like to think of it, you were in London as well, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so one of my colleagues, Dr. Ted, introduced a term that I use. It's called bionte hacking, B-I-O-N-T hacking. The idea is that we're actually shifting physiology, but we're doing it in a more measured, health-focused way, using a ground to do it. The challenge with biohacking, and I'm going to get to your question. But the challenge with biohacking is that there's no real ground to it. There's no real way to kind of put it all together. People are using lots of things and all together and stacking, but they don't have a way to kind of understand what their foundational biology, their foundational health is. So we're giving them, I think, a framework here, and that's health optimization medicine in my work and Dr. Ted's work as well. But anyway, we'll get back to that. BioNTech. Yes. But the idea with mitigating vasoconstriction, you can absolutely do that. And there's actually a couple of very easy ways to do it. One way is to go into a cold environment. So whether that's a cold plunge, it's cryotherapy, for example. What happens in those environments is that you constrict down all your blood vessels initially when you're in the cold environment. But after you get out, you start warming up, you dilate like crazy. And that's why you feel so good, along with epinephrine and all the other neurotransmitters that are released because your body just thought you were going to die. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so you didn't die. You're now warm. Now you're vasodilated. You go into a chamber that's going to mitigate some of that vasoconstriction that goes into the chamber. The deeper the chamber, the more vasoconstriction you're going to have. So in a mild hyperbaric chamber, you're not going to have as much vasoconstriction as you will have if you go into a heart chamber at deeper depths, as an example. A couple other ways you can do it. You can take a supplement that helps with blood vasodilation, like something like arginine or niacin that help with vasodilation. Those are just some other ways to do it. You also can exercise before you go into the chamber as well. That's another way to do it because you're going to dilate blood vessels and vasodilate when you're doing that as well. Another way is heat exposure, so light exposure specifically. So low-level light therapy that's going to dilate blood vessels to various wavelengths can also help. So infrared saunas are another way you can do it. I often recommend saunas after hyperbaric therapy, then low-level light therapy that's not infrared beforehand to help vasodilate. Mm-hmm. You can also use either low-level light therapy or infrared after the treatment as well to help solidify some gains and detox at the same time. So there's lots of different ways you can pair these things together. But from a vasoconstricting perspective, those are the main ways you can help mitigate.
I have a cold plunge in my backyard, so I just need the chamber now, and I've got the ultimate stack right there.
You're doing it, yeah.
So, okay, let's talk about this health optimization home. Health optimization management, is that what that is?
Medicine.
Okay. Yeah. It's a little bit different than functional integrative medicine. I've kind of studied up on it a little bit from what you guys have been doing, and I love Dr. Ted Achacoso. I think he's brilliant, and he's thinking way outside the box. So tell people a little bit about what it is and how your approach is a little bit different and what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, so I found out pretty early on that I wasn't going to do conventional medicine. That is for sure. I also explored functional medicine a little bit when I was developing my hyperbaric practice. And what I decided was I was going to refer people to functional medicine doctors, instead of doing it myself, because it really felt unwieldy to me a little bit, just from being a very busy doctor, being a busy dad, and trying to figure out how you could do all this work all together and do the fellowship and some of the other work that was required to be a functional medicine doctor. So I was referring, and I was happy doing that, but I also felt that there was something missing from my practice. And because I wasn't allowing my patients to have a foundation where they could truly harness the power of hyperbaric oxygen therapy to its fullest. Because, you know, to utilize oxygen, you have to be able to make energy as efficiently as possible. And if you're not making energy as efficiently as possible, you can very much cause more problems than you actually realized you were making in the first place. You can make more rust. If you don't have a good antioxidant capability, you can make more oxidative stress. So there's lots of things that I really felt required a foundational approach. And so when I met Dr. Ted back in 2017, he described to me something that really resonated with me, which was a health-focused way of approaching this foundation. It wasn't about disease. It wasn't about root cause of disease. It was more, how are your cells working? How is your gut working? Is it optimized? Is it balanced? And once you balance at the cellular level, then everything else tends to get better in the process. So it wasn't about focusing on the root cause. It was more looking at balancing, looking at maintaining, detecting, and correcting imbalances at the level of what's something called the metabolome. And the metabolome is what's happening at the cell in real time. All the vitamins, minerals, cofactors, nutrients, all the toxins in our environment, everything that's circulating in the cell at the same time. And that brings up the concept of the holobiont, H-O-L-O-B-I-O-N-T. And the idea of the holobiont is that we're made up of organisms that are human, that are bacteria, that are fungus, that are virus. We're also made up of the toxins in our environment. Their perfumes, the gas fumes, the light exposures, the bad EMFs, light exposures, yeah. the EMFs, everything. Yeah. All of that is interacting at our cellular level that we can measure. We can measure our antioxidant levels. We can measure our toxin levels. We can measure our vitamin minerals, our fatty acid levels, our amino acid levels. We can measure signs of gut dysbiosis or gut disease or gut maladaptivity, I guess you can call it, say. Mm-hmm. And lots of different, I'm thinking dysbiosis is a big word, but I always have a hard time. Well, sometimes I have a hard time with regular words. So anyway, so you can measure all of that. You can optimize that. And then as a result of measuring and optimizing at that level, you can create a significant shift in our physiology for the benefit. And so that's what really resonated with me about the practice. And it was looking at a data-driven model. It was looking at various markers that you can measure very easily and measures that I had learned were actually compounds and intermediates that I had learned about in medical school, but I didn't know that you could actually measure in real time. So it was stuff that felt very easy for me as far as a translation or a transition going from a conventional practice, an integrative hyperbaric practice, to building on it a foundation, which is health optimization medicine. So there are seven pillars to the basic understanding of what health optimization medicine is. The first one is metabolomics, as I've been describing. Gut immune system is a very big part of it as well. So measuring gut metabolites, not only on the metabolomic side, but also in the gut itself. So stool analysis, looking at mitochondrial health specifically, light, water, magnetism, chronobiology, so that's circadian rhythm, sleep, and sleep hygiene, sleep hacking, et cetera. Also looking at evolutionary biology, so where your ancestors come from and what your ancestral diets would have looked like back thousands of years ago before modern society and farming, et cetera. Also looking at exposomics, so the toxins in our environment more specifically and delving into what those look like, EMFs included. What else? Epigenetics, and looking at how epigenetics affects how our genes are expressed and how that manifests in various ways, and looking at vitamins and minerals and cofactors, environmental stimuli that affect our epigenetics. And I'm probably missing something, but that's almost seven.
That's a pretty good list right there.
So it's a pretty comprehensive list, right? And so the idea is not all of it's measured, but most of it is, but the foundation is always on cellular metabolic data and then creating a plan for clients that uses all that data together, but does not think about disease. Puts disease aside, puts conditions aside, and then instead focuses on the health of the system. And by focusing on the health, some of the beneficial side effects may be that some of those other things go away. We never make any claims to that effect, though. The claim is that we're going to balance, we're going to optimize, we're going to detect, we're going to correct. And then from there, you will see the benefits, very likely. But we can't tell you what those benefits are going to be exactly. Everybody's going to be different.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like such a fantastic comprehensive plan to help someone get better. You know, functional medicine, obviously they like to look for root causes, eliminate those. This sounds like it's almost like building up the foundation or giving your own body its own tools back to regenerate, rejuvenate, live longer, live healthier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's not that functional medicine shouldn't be used. In fact, it's not a system that takes its place. It's a system that runs in parallel to functional medicine. It runs in parallel to conventional medicine. It's not mutually exclusive to any of it. It's just your foundation. Functional medicine doctors do some of this work already. They just don't do it as formally as we do it in health optimization medicine. And we've just created a plan that I feel is actually really fantastic for clients, but also fantastic for practitioners that are interested in an out-of-the-box approach. They want to get out of conventional medicine, or if they're chiropractors or naturopaths, that they want to add on something that's more aligned with their philosophy. But they don't want to do functional medicine specifically for any number of reasons. But at least in my experience, it's because they'd like something that's more health-focused and not more disease-focused. And so, you know, I have clients that I do health optimization medicine work with, and then I'll send them to a functional medicine doctor for Lyme disease testing or co-infection testing, or obviously other practitioners for other practices, including, you know, sleep apnea testing or neurofeedback or other things that will be helpful in various ways, depending on the condition.
Yeah.
But the foundation's the same. I like to think about it on the 80-20 side of things, Jay. So it's 80% of the benefit for 20% of the testing that you'd normally get if you went to a functional medicine doctor, for example. And then from there, you do the work, you see the benefits, And then you kind of take it the next step from there, depending on how people are doing, you know? And so that's how I see the process.
I love it. I'm coming up there to see you. You're in San Francisco, right?
I'm virtual, dude. You don't have to come down.
You're virtual. Oh.
Yeah, so health optimization medicine is a virtual practice. And that's the nice thing also for people like myself who are interested in doing work with clients, but doing health-focused work, and also have other responsibilities, like lots of kids or lots of other things they want to do. They want to be on a beach. They can do health optimization medicine. I send kits to people in the mail, and they get the kits. They do the kits. It's blood, urine, and stool. And then 4 to 6 weeks later, I get all the information back. It takes a little while to get some of this testing done because it's specialized. And then once I get that testing done, I'll do a report of findings. I mean, I love to do them in person, but I also do them via Skype or Zoom all the time. It takes about 90 minutes to do. And it's a ton of information, but we often come back a week later to go through it all. And I create a lifestyle behavior supplement program, dietary program, in conjunction with your dietary requests or needs, wants. If you want to be a vegan, I don't recommend it, but you can do it. We'll do our best. Can you be a low carb vegan? I don't know. Is that possible? But anyway, in any respect, I do my best to create a holistic plan. So it's very much dovetails very much into the work that I saw my father doing as a kid, you know, looking at things from a very holistic perspective, but then throwing on the conventional spin by data-driven metrics that you can follow over time, and you can balance too, and you can look at as ways of metrics of, or metrics to see how you've done and how you.
I love the aspect where it's, you know, clinician orchestrated, because I've gone down the road as a biohacker, and I've thrown everything in the kitchen sink inside, and I've done all these different blood tests and panels, and ones where the reports are coming back, they're 20 pages long. The one I think of Nutrival, and it's a lot of information. It's more than what I know, and I'm just sitting there blown away with just too much TMI, too much information. So to have someone there who can then digest that and say, okay, based off of this, this is what you need to do, makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, we use the Nutrival, Jay. It's a fantastic test, but it's a test that does require some expertise and also some significant reframing, I feel, and we feel as a company, as to how best to utilize it.
Yeah.
And Genova is great because they're a partner of ours. We use them as a diagnostic company for most of our testing. Although, again, anybody can use whatever testing they want. It's not required as a practitioner, but that's what I use, and that's who we have a partnership with, because their metabolic testing, metabolomic testing, is some of the best out there. And so, but the way they interpret it is very different from the way we interpret it.
Exactly.
So we've created a nonprofit company called Health Optimization Medicine and Practice that is looking to educate doctors and practitioners on how to practice this health optimization medicine and practice, Home Hope for short. And it's medicine, it's home if you're a doctor or a osteopath, a DO, and it's hope if you fall into the other category of practitioners where you're licensed, but you're not a doctor or an osteopath, basically. So you're a hope practitioner. And we created this education so that other doctors can also get the same education and practice it the way we are doing. The first module has been up since the middle of last year, and the final six of them, all six, the rest of them, will be released early this year. And I'm just finishing up epigenetics editing today, in fact. So it's all happening, and those will all be available relatively soon. And then the idea is to be a nonprofit company too. We're not looking to make money here per se on the education. The nonprofit company would like to sustain itself, but it's not about making money. It's about educating. We have a for-profit company that's making products that make your tongue blue. That's the first one that you know about already. And that is on a different realm of a for-profit company that's going to fund our nonprofit, but also be a for-profit company for fun, right? So, and have products also that dovetail very much into our philosophy, the health optimization medicine philosophy. And so that's how we see it working over the long term.
Okay. Just to kind of touch back on the hyperbaric oxygen therapy, or even this whole new protocol that you've developed here, what are the, and on this show it's called Best Night Ever. So what are the ramifications or the benefits of that and sleep specifically? Or what have you seen?
Well, it's actually a really common one. It's a question I ask every single patient that I ever see that wants hyperbaric therapy is, do they snore at night? Do they feel rested in the morning? Because if you have sleep apnea every night, like you said before, Jay, when we were talking, you get hypoxic if you have sleep apnea. Your oxygen levels drop. And when you do that, you're basically causing inflammation in your brain, inflammation in your body. You're high risk of everything, stroke, heart attack, high blood pressure, you name it. And so it's because you're increasing inflammation. So if you go into a hyperbaric chamber, actually one of the things that I see right away if you have sleep apnea is you're going to feel fantastic because you're getting oxygenated.
It's almost like being on a night of CPAP or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. With oxygen, with more oxygen.
Without a strap and a mask,
Yes, exactly. So you're going to feel fantastic. But what's going to happen is that any gains you get in the chamber are going to be gone the next night because you are hypoxic again. And so what I've seen is that some people will do very, very well in the hyperbaric chamber if they have sleep apnea. But if it's not treated, their symptoms will come back, plain and simple. So you need to have treated sleep apnea to be able to truly benefit with hyperbaric therapy over the long term. And so I don't let people go into the chamber unless it's an acute issue if they have untreated sleep apnea. Now, if they have severe sleep apnea, even like so severe that they're going hypoxic multiple times there's criteria for this, but if they have severe sleep apnea, I'm also a little bit hesitant depending on body habitus. If they're very, very large, it also could be a risk to go into a chamber because of CO2 retention. But that's a very small class of people or a very small subgroup of people that I wouldn't, I don't see very often. But in general, if sleep apnea is treated, hyperbaric therapy is going to make you feel fantastic.
I love it. Okay. So getting close to the end of the show here, but since we're on the topic of sleep here, and I've been asking this on most of my guests now, what is your nightly routine or things that you would recommend to optimize your sleep at night?
That's a good question. So my sleep protocol is just sheer fatigue.
That works for a lot of people.
I'm just kidding. But like for the most part, I'm exhausted. But I've checked my sleep for many years and thus far I've been okay. But what I really do like to do is my favorite biohack, my favorite other than hyperbaric therapy, is my infrared sauna. So I often go into the sauna at night for 20 or 30 minutes. And then I do a lot of good stretching. I have an inversion table as well that I'll use. And so my sleep regimen at night typically is sauna and then inversion with stretching and then meditation and then lights out.
I actually have an infrared sauna coming this week to my house. So I'm very excited to incorporate that into my nightly routine, and I'm going to do exactly what you did right there.
So I ended up getting one, Jay, when I found out that I was having a fourth child. So my wife and I planned on three, but then we found out we were going to have four. And I live in a pretty small house in the Bay Area. And the next week, I bought myself an infrared sauna. Yeah. And I did it as like my own room in my home.
Yeah.
But it's also a place where I meditate. It's a place where I listen to podcasts, even sometimes watch Netflix. That's okay too. And I love it. I mean, the thing about the infrared sauna, what it does is detoxifying you at night, but it's also lowering your body temperature. Because when you get out and you take a cool to moderately cool shower, your body temperature is going to go down. Mm-hmm. And that's actually helpful for sleep as well. Your body needs to be cooler when you sleep, as you know, I'm sure. And so as a result of that colder body temperature, even like a tenth of a degree is going to help you. Yeah. So it's that combination that is usually my secret sauce. If it's a secret, it's not, and meditation before bed is really, really helpful too. I usually don't do it in bed. I usually do it in a chair. Some people do it in bed. I like to meditate about three times a day, but my evening meditation's usually shorter because I'm tired and helps me go to bed too.
I love it. All right. So we've talked about a lot of things on the show here today. Where can people go? People listening to this, what if they say, I live in Iowa or South Dakota and there's no hyperbaric chambers, or I want to learn more, get into this kind of stuff. So where can they go to kind of go down this road?
So I do worldwide hyperbaric consultation, education, and advocacy. I talk to people all over the country, all over the world. And I have affiliations, or I know relatively well most of the facilities that are in the United States that are operating. And then worldwide, I have a smattering of places that I know. If I don't know the place, I usually know somebody who does. And so I often help people coordinate their hyperbaric treatments in those kinds of facilities. I can help get home chambers, if that's something that makes sense, and that'll be potentially a therapeutic option as well. And so I work through integrativehbot.com. That's my website, www.integrativehbot, the letters hbot.com. And so that's my main hyperbaric website. I'm also on Instagram, mostly through the hyperbaric work that I do at Dr. Scott Scher, although that also includes some of my health optimization medicine work as well. I have a concierge health optimization medicine practice here in the Bay Area, in California, basically, because it's a virtual practice. I'm also licensed in New York, so I see people in the New York metropolitan area as well. That also can be found at home-so, let's try that website again. It's home-sf.co.com is my health concierge, health optimization medicine concierge website. So integrativehbot.com, home-sf.co. And then for the health optimization medicine nonprofit, it's homehope.org. And we have an Instagram for that as well. I think it's at homehope.org, if I'm not mistaken. Although that'll be getting more active in this year as we finish up the modules.
All right, that's a lot of information. I'll put them in the show notes for people listening as well, too, so they can kind of revisit that.
Just Google Dr. Scott Scher and the rest will come up.
Then the rest will happen. Yes. So this has been fantastic, really fascinating. I've been excited and wanting to get connected with you on here and talk about all this cool stuff. I'm always looking for different therapies, hacks, tricks, tips, supplements, oxygen, whatever it is that can help people optimize their lives, improve their sleep, have more energy, more vitality. I mean, you literally touched base on just about everything that I look for when I want to get better, and it's what I recommend for my patients when they want to get better. So thank you so much for everything that you're doing. I'm super excited to continue this journey, especially with you as well, too. I'm going to have to get some of those kits ordered back to my house, and we'll talk later about that.
We'll talk about it. Sure, no problem. It's my pleasure, Jay. Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Scott, have a great day. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, you made it to the end of the show. I hope you learned a thing or two from Dr. Scott. I know I did. And remember that question I asked in the beginning about if you're willing to get into a tube and get pressurized and breathe oxygen? Has your answer changed? I know I'm still on board, and I can't wait to go back and do it again. And as always, if you want to learn more about what I'm doing, you can follow me on my Instagram account at sleepbiohacker. That is someone who likes to hack their sleep or take control of their sleep or optimize their sleep. All of the above. I mean, I'm on there sharing all these different tips, tricks, gadgets, meditations, routines, supplements, therapies, and I'd love to get you on there so you can see what I'm doing, so you can learn a thing or two and take your sleep to the next level. So thanks again for tuning in and making it all the way to the end. I really appreciate and I'm grateful for your support and listenership. The only favor I ask of you is that if you enjoy this show, please hit the subscribe button if you haven't on your podcast app, or share it with a friend or two who could benefit from this type of information. I know this hyperbaric oxygen therapy session that helps the podcast, which helps me get great guests on the show with fantastic expertise and knowledge to share with you. And with that said, I hope you have the best night ever.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only. Statements and views expressed in this show are not medical advice. The show, including Dr. Jay Corsandi, the co-host, guest, and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of any information contained herein. Opinions of the guests are their own. We do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests, nor do we make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. If you think you have a medical problem, please consult a licensed physician.